are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, February 7th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Trump wants a military parade. Big one. And John Kelly, just as racist as his boss. Meanwhile, a bipartisan agreement in the Senate on more money for war. And partisan gerrymandering could be in trouble at the Supreme Court of the United States. Meanwhile, Dems flip another deep red state house. Mike Pence vows the harshest North Korean sanctions possible. And Trump now looking to add lifetime caps on Medicaid, folks. You only need that health insurance for a limited period of time.
Don't be greedy.
Meanwhile, speaking of greedy, Disney leaves crumbs. Just crumbs. And a new report, we can grow our economy significantly by canceling all of our government-held student debt. And lastly, as the Pennsylvania Republicans attempt to impeach an entire Supreme Court, Scott Walker is now refusing to hold special elections. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome the whole cast and cavalcade. Majority Report is here today. Michael is here, of course, and Matt is making sure that you hear my voice. Jamie is switching back and forth and apparently having breakfast. And Brendan is on the couch doing whatever Brendan does at these times.
All doing sorts a of, great like, job.
A whole mix of stuff that we don't even, we have no idea what's going on. Let's just start with this coming out of the Senate. As you know, tomorrow is the deadline for a government shutdown. Is that correct? It is tomorrow, right? They had punted. And according to the New York Times, just moments ago, Senate leaders have neared a far-reaching agreement to set spending levels on military and domestic spending for the next 2 years, supposedly breaking the cycle of fiscal crises that have bedeviled the Capitol since last summer. The accord was also expected to include disaster relief for areas hit by last year's hurricanes and wildfires. And here's the deal. In the House, now, both in the House and in the Senate, it appears that Democrats are going to settle for a commitment from the Republican leadership. All right, just take it easy. That they will address some form of a DACA fix.
They really mean it this time.
Right. They really mean it this time. And in the House, the Freedom Caucus, led by Mark Meadows, has said, we will not vote to raise any domestic spending. Now, maybe they could find their way to funding the Pentagon more. Maybe not. Who knows? But that sets up a specific dynamic. If Paul Ryan cannot get the entire membership of his Republican caucus to vote, more or less the entire, to vote for some type of government funding bill, he will need to rely on some Democratic votes. Therefore, Nancy Pelosi has a certain amount of leverage. And as such, the Senate deal sparked immediate opposition from the leader of the House of Democrats, Representative Nancy Pelosi, who said she could not agree to any budget deal that was not accompanied by a promised debate over legislation to protect the fate of young immigrants brought to the country illegally as children known as Dreamers. She went on to say the budget caps agreement includes many Democratic priorities with the disaster recovery package and dollar-for-dollar increases in defense and non-defense budget. So this goes all the way back to the sequester during the Obama years, where everybody thought, not everybody, but there was some type of thinking in Democratic circles that, oh, Obama's really faked these guys out. He's going to say, you know, if you're going to cut domestic, you got to cut military spending, and they'll never go for that. And then guess what? They went for it. So this basically reverses that sequester to a certain amount, dollar for dollar increases in defense and non-defense budget. So we'll give you a buck to kill people, but we want a buck maybe to pay for children's health care at a community center. She goes on to say Democrats have secured hundreds of billions of dollars to invest in communities across America. There will be billions in funding to fight opioids, strengthen our veterans and the NIH to build job-creating rural infrastructure and broadband, and to fund access to childcare and quality higher education. I have not seen any breakdown of this bill to assess those claims, but a dollar-for-dollar increase in domestic spending to defense spending is, at the very least, that. However, again, she can't support it without a commitment from Speaker Ryan, comparable to the commitment from Leader McConnell, which is, you know, sort of silly.
What's the next phase after Lucy and the football?
Well, that's the whole point of Lucy and the football. Yeah, it just happens over and over again.
Okay.
I mean, look, there's not a lot of leverage when you are the party that is out of power. There's not a lot of leverage. And there's also a certain amount of fear that by getting too aggressive, and I'm not even sure what that would look like, theoretically, all of this could pass without any Democratic support, I guess, except for in the House. I mean, excuse me, in the Senate. But you have 8 senators, maybe 10, who are nervous about their reelection. And in some weird ways, the idea now that wasn't present this time last year, that Democrats could actually take the Senate, and I think Ryan Grimm alluded to this a little bit yesterday, the idea now that Democrats could take the Senate has in some ways made them a little bit more timid, which, I mean, look, it is always easier to operate with abandon if you don't think you have much to lose. And now there's a sense that they may have an opportunity to lose. I wouldn't approach it this way. I would get more aggressive. But
I mean, there is also the principle in sports, right? Like, if you're playing not to lose, you tend to play more poorly. Also at a certain point, it's just like, I think especially for people like us, and not to personalize it, but to make at least the arguments we make, where we're constantly fending off all of these dumb arguments from all sides, and we are criticizing Democrats for all of their failures and all of their complacency and all of their sort of part of the problemness, but then also not indulging in dumb arguments either. I mean, it doesn't help.
Well, it doesn't help. But I mean, it's also, the reality is that nobody's going to control Joe Manchin. There were reports that Joe Manchin was thinking about resigning. And, I've never heard anybody's assessment who I trust that some other Democrat's going to win in West Virginia.
No, and Manchin's Manchin. That's a very distinct proposition. Like, I think you could
Heitkamp might be Heitkamp, and Donnelly might be Donnelly. I mean, you know, once you get outside of three or four of them, then it starts making a little more sense that you increase the party discipline. But once you get past three or four, it may not make a difference anyways.
But I think the strategic, to me, it's more in like how Schumer's managing it and what his instincts are. Because for what it's worth, especially in senators, I mean, I think especially in minority, I mean, there's only so much power you can exert. And you can't accept, like Manchin, you just accept, like, look, it's better he caucuses with Democrats, and it's great he voted against the tax bill and health care repeal. Cool. And you don't expect that much more from him. But as a general kind of cohesive party, oh, go for it.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm going for this. So the other day, and in a moment we'll get back to some of the news, but the other day, right, I mentioned that I had a man crate coming. Now, I know, people look at me and they go, you, man crate? I don't get it. How's that? These things don't. Yes. Mancrates.com. It's the only place to find awesome gifts guys love. You got Valentine's Day coming 7 days away. These things come pretty quick. I bet you still can make it. We're not talking some cheesy cologne sampler. Mancrates offered curated gift collections for every type of guy. The sports fanatic, the home chef, the outdoorsman. I'm sort of just like a little bit of all of those things. I'm sort of like a renaissance man. You could check out classics like the NFL barware crate. But the problem is, I'm a renaissance man, but because I'm not committed to any of them, like, you know, for me, if you're
like
shopping,
Da Vinci except bad.
I don't want the barware crate, the NFL bar. But I do know a lot of guys who would. In fact, I may get that for a gift. I mean, I'm not going to give it for Valentine's Day. But, there's a whiskey appreciation crate. I have a whiskey appreciation. There's fresh takes on traditional Valentine gifts like the jerky heart or salami bouquet. Both those things definitely there for me. I think around the office, people know that I'm a big beef and fish jerky guy. Go to mancrates.com, pick the perfect gift, then wait for that magic moment. He'll fall head over heels when his gift arrives and when he gets to pry open the wood crate with the included crowbar. They have thousands of five-star reviews, and every gift comes with a complete satisfaction guarantee. All right, you want to see the one I got?
Yeah, this looks amazing.
It actually
is. This is a very good-looking.
So I got, now, like, I have a cutting board. Can you see this? It's like a bamboo cutting board.
Yeah.
And it's got my name on it.
It's mine.
It's mine.
Sam.
Sam.
Just...
Oh, I'm sorry. Is there any confusion here at home as to whose cutting board this is? Well, let's just check the name. And this sweet-ass knife, which is, I'm super psyched about. This is a great, a Japanese-style dicing knife. It's beautiful. And, of course, it has my name on it. So, like, oh, whose knife is that? Does anybody know? Oh, it's mine. I'm sorry, because my name is Sam, and it's right there. Go to mancrates.com/majority, get 5% off. They don't offer a discount anywhere else. You can go get 5% off right now at mancrates.com/majority. Go check out all the different things they have, because there's a bunch of stuff. There's stuff like more woodworking stuff, which I also like. I'm not fishing for gifts. I'm just telling people. mancrates.com/majority, mancrates.com/majority. Now, one other note here, and people have heard me talk about my other obsession, which is dental hygiene. Because when you get up in my age, you start to realize, like, dollar for dollar, I could be saving a lot of money if I just brush my teeth a lot better back in the day. When it comes to your health, brushing your teeth is one of the most important parts of your day. The return on investment in brushing your teeth properly is huge. That's why Quip has combined dentistry with a design to make a new electric toothbrush that packs just the right amount of vibrations into a much, much slimmer design at a fraction of the cost of traditional electric brushes. With Quip, you get guiding pulses. They alert you when to switch sides. So if you don't, you lose track, making brushing the right amount effortless. Comes with a mount that sucks right onto your mirror. You can be used as a cover when you travel anywhere hygienically. That's that is the difference with this.
Deal.
Look, the reason why people don't use electric toothbrushes, which they all should, is because They're too big. They're too bulky. They don't fit on your little tiny sink in your apartment. They tip over. All this stuff. You can't travel with them, and then you get out of the habit. You can do all that with Quip. That is why the key to good dental hygiene is to brush your teeth on a regular basis with a good toothbrush. And Quip, it's simple. Quip subscription plan refreshes your brush on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. That includes free shipping worldwide. No wonder Quip is backed by a network of over 10,000 dental professionals and was named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of the year. Find out yourself, folks. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/majority right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. Get your first refill pack free at getquip.com/majority. That's spelled GETQUIP .com/majority. All right, two products that I use on a regular basis. In fact, one on a daily basis, and I intend to, I don't know, I'm going to cut stuff every day. That's my new...
Cut stuff, brush teeth. It's like chop brush wood, teeth, carry water
brushing
for
teeth,
you.
And, nice. But I'm going to commit to cutting stuff every day. All right. So let's get to what's happening on the immigration front. Of course, you know, the immigration is becoming, I don't know, it's probably become. I mean, when you contemplate the idea that Donald Trump launched his campaign by saying that Mexico is sending a bunch of rapists over here, I'm sure some of them are okay people. And, you know, hopefully we can put to rest, and this should have been done a long time ago, but John Kelly, who is, are we okay on sound over there? John Kelly, he is the White House POS, I think they refer to him. And he was explaining what's going on with the Dreamers. Now, as you know, under the program initiated under the Obama administration, about 690,000 Dreamers received deferred treatment status. In other words, look, we don't have the resources as a country to go after 11 million people who are here without documentation, proper documentation. Therefore, we're going to make a prosecutorial discretion decision. We are not going to come after these groups of people. If you are in that group of people, rather than have you not be able to get a job, have you not be able to do this, we want you to come into the system so that we're aware of you and we can keep track of you, but you'll be able to work, be productive citizens. We're going to issue a special Social Security card, all of it. That was what the DACA program was. Here is John Kelly explaining why Donald Trump is offering more than 690,000 people the opportunity to receive a permanent status in this country and simultaneously exhibiting how much of a racist he is.
Audio, so you're going to hear from General John Kelly. I want you to listen.
Pause it for 1 second. He is not a general. He used to be a general. He's not a general. Right now, he is the chief of staff, or the POS, I think they call him.
Audio. So you're going to hear from General John Kelly. I want you to listen, and then we're going to talk about it on the other side.
There are 690,000 official DACA registrants. And the president sent over what amounts to be 2.5 times that number to 1.8 million. The difference between 690 and 1.8 million were the people that some would say were too afraid to sign up, others would say were too lazy to get off their asses, but they didn't sign up. So the president shockingly said, okay, 1.8 million, and then probably the biggest shock was in a path to citizenship.
All right, so contrary to this bigot's perspective that there were 9 million people too lazy to get off their ass. The fact is that only 1.3 million of that 1.8 were even eligible for DACA last year. Eligibility requirements are rather strict. They have to do with how long you've been in the country. So some people haven't aged into it yet. You have to finish a certain amount of school. And they haven't aged into that yet. So now we're talking about closer to 500,000 or 600,000 people as to why they didn't sign up. And Kelly is probably correct that a significant number of these people were too afraid to do so. Because here's a possible scenario you are facing as someone who was brought to this country as a child, as an infant, as a 2-year-old, as a 7-year-old, as a 9-year-old. And now it's 10, 15 years later. You have no familiarity with that country that you came from. You speak English just like your classmates do. You can go and sign up. Let the government know where you live. Go in for your regular meetings. But what happens if Barack Obama is no longer president? What happens if, say, the next president turns out to be a racist piece of crap? What happens if that president decides that he's going to start rounding up people like you? What happens if that president decides to use you as a political tool and not renew your status? Seem far-fetched? I bet you there's a lot of those people right now who are quite happy that they did not sign up for that status. Not to mention, it costs hundreds of dollars. $500 to apply, $500 to renew every 2 years.
What is the justification for that? Does it take that much labor to process each application?
1/3 of the people eligible for DACA lived in families with incomes below the federal poverty line. So the idea of paying $500, maybe there's a couple of kids. That's just way impossible. So it's possible that there are some people who are just too lazy to get off their asses to sign up. But it's much more likely that other reasons are why people who fall into that broad category of dreamers but don't necessarily fall into DACA eligible would not have signed up. And for most of those reasons, they're looking pretty smart and prescient now. Meanwhile, here's a nice story that should warm your hearts about how we're making America great again. A Kansas professor and father of three who has lived in the United States for 3 decades. He's been here for 30 years. Saeed Ahmed Jamal, originally from Bangladesh. He is a chemistry instructor. He entered the U.S. lawfully on an international student visa in the 1980s. He has 3 children, ages 7, 12, and 14, all of whom are U.S. citizens. He has a record, a couple of speeding tickets from over a decade ago. He was headed to school with his daughter, taking his daughter to school on January 24th, when ICE officials showed up on his front lawn in Lawrence, Kansas, arrested him. When his wife tried to hug her husband goodbye, ICE agents stopped her, telling her that they would arrest her for interference. They're doing this, remember now, in front of the young girl. I think she's 12. Jamal had been given prosecutorial discretion to indefinitely stay in the U.S. under a policy formalized by Barack Obama. This is not the DACA. This was a different program. Because apparently they didn't realize under the Obama administration that this Kansan, who was a chemistry instructor with three kids and had a record of having a speeding ticket, was such a danger. Oh, he's also involved in his children's school board. He is now being held more than 150 miles away from his home at the Morgan County Detention Center in Missouri. In a letter shared on the family attorney's website, Jamal's oldest son, Tahsin, wrote that since his father's arrest, my little brother cries every night, my sister can't focus in school, and I can't sleep at night. No mention from this 14-year-old boy about how much more safe and American we are in this country. There's just going to be more and more of these stories. And again, people can ask what the purpose is. There's an answer. The answer is to terrorize immigrants in this country. Period. End of story. Anybody who can't figure out why the Trump administration is doing this is in denial. They are doing this to terrorize people. There's no other explanation. They don't even have the bandwidth, the capacity to deport all these people they're arresting. That's why you see figures like the arrests are up by 30, 40% year over year relative to one on the Obama administration, but deportations are not. It's because they don't even have the capacity to deport. They're just detaining and terrorizing. That's what's going on. ICE is boarding Amtrak trains, asking for papers. They're boarding buses, asking for papers. They're going into places of work, asking for papers. They're standing outside of courthouses, asking for papers. This is a Twitter thread that Ronald Reagan brought to my attention from a immigration lawyer in, I think, in the Seattle area. It's a little bit long, but I think you should hear this. The day of my nine-year-old's client's immigration court hearing, this lawyer has a nine-year-old client going into the court hearing. We were riding in the elevator down from my office. A man got in and smiled and asked my client if he was going to school. No, I'm not going to school, he said. Well then, are you going to do something fun? Asked the man. Yeah, said my client and smiled. On the elevator ride up to the immigration court on the 25th floor, he giggled at how fast we were going. My client's mother, back in the U.S. after a 2012 deportation, she doesn't speak English or Spanish and couldn't explain to the border agents her fear of return, testified on my client's behalf since he is nine and unable to explain why he would be in danger in his home country. She described her suffering in her home country, first in the aftermath of the Civil War, when the military, as part of their Scorched Earth campaign, burned down her entire village, as everyone who lived there was indigenous and therefore suspected of harboring guerrillas. Then, when the humiliation of that war took its toll on her family and her father turned violent against his wife and children, how she was afraid when her husband left to the U.S. to try and lift her and their two young children out of never enough food to eat poverty because she'd heard of other women left behind by their husbands being raped by the gangs that had started roaming around their town. These women who were viewed as easy prey now that they no longer had men to protect them. So she didn't want her son to grow up in that with violence becoming a normal part of his life as it had been a part of hers, so she brought him here, here being the United States. Halfway through her testimony, my client, remember, this is the 9-year-old boy, had been, I don't know if it's a boy, actually, had been making paper airplanes, totally oblivious to what was going on around him. Yeah, it's a boy. Got bored. He got up out of his chair and started walking around the courtroom. He went over to the desk of the ICE attorney, whose job it was to argue for my client's deportation. Leaned on the desk, beamed up at the ICE attorney. "Hi," he said. The ICE attorney smiled back at him and gestured to me to get my client to sit back down in his chair. The Department of Homeland Security's attorney's questioning of my client's mother was gentle this time. It is often not. He knew he had won and thankfully didn't feel the need to belabor the point. The judge politely asked my client's mother some questions. They were quite gentle, too. She answered all of them with honesty of someone who had never thought about embellishing her story because her fear for her and her son's safety was as real to her as the fact that the sun rises in the morning. The judge's clerk brought me a cup of hot tea because she could hear I was losing my voice. We took a short break. My client pointed at the framed photos hanging in the immigration court hall. "Donald Trump," he said, and giggled. At the end of the hearing, the judge ordered my client deported. He said he had no doubt that my client's mother's fears for her and her son's safety were real and justified, but that they didn't provide a basis for my client to remain in the U.S. under our immigration laws. When we walked out of the courtroom, my client waved at the judge and said goodbye. "Goodbye and good luck," said the judge. He advised me with a grin that bourbon was the best remedy for a hoarse throat. The last tweet in that thread is, "It's hard to see the North Star sometimes in this upside-down world." So there's your daily sense of, you know, what's going on in this country, the way we're treating 9-year-olds and 51-year-old fathers or 55-year-old fathers of three kids. And that piece of crap in the White House. I could be describing any number of those people, have the audacity to talk about the laziness of the people who, according to them, also walked miles and miles through the desert to get here to pay to make sure that their kids
that was the law could eat some food. Part.
Right.
And then the lazy part is not subjecting themselves to these people's terrorism.
Just disgusting. Just disgusting.
And where does the stereotype of the lazy immigrant even come from? I mean, undocumented immigrants cannot access most social services, so I don't really understand how they could possibly be lazy.
It's the cartoons of the Mexicans having a siesta. Honestly, I think that's a big
part. No, and there was, and it also goes, I mean, there was like always a story. I mean, Irish people were dirty, Italians were whatever. I mean, there's always a narrative for whoever the target immigrant group is. Always. And of course, like, reality's not going to intrude on that.
Let's just have maybe just a little bit of good news before we head into the fun half. So that we can sort of
there's all these people who just be held in you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's never going to be sort of criminal accountability for any of these people, but they should just be completely socially shunned and held in completely. I mean, we talk about like all the areas where we need to actually have dialogue and persuade and push our message out to people. Anybody involved in this on any level should be held
without a doubt.
Complete public shame, contempt. They're totally out of the realm. They're
that
disgusting.
Lawyer sitting there for
yeah,
the DHS.
Exactly.
Like, I
that's
get
a
it.
Bad
You
got
to make money.
No.
You got a family.
You were following
get up,
orders.
Walk out.
You were following orders.
Get up and walk
I've
out.
I've heard that justification before. We all have. It's disgusting.
Get up and walk out. We'll do a GoFundMe for any of those people who quit.
Yeah, remember all those rogue Twitter accounts that came about? Has there been a rogue ICE agent?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
No, and not and no rogue attorneys. And I mean, it's
I mean, like, I think to a certain extent, and it's probably not true of all of them. I think you know, but a lot of these people go in because they want that power. They want that sense of power. Sickness. Absolute sickness. Here's a nice little story. Walt Disney announced last week, I guess it was about a week and a half ago now, that in the wake of the new tax law, because we were talking yesterday about crumbs, right? Crumbs. Crumbs is the new deplorables. I think I'm going to use that now. I actually thought that. I said that for the first time.
Crumbs for some of you. Crumbs. New Republican tax policy for anybody who isn't a multimillionaire.
So, Walt Disney, last end of January, announced that it's going to spend $125 million on bonuses for their workers. And then another $50 million on an education program for some employees that presumably they're going to get a good return on investment on that, right? So that's more of a... So $125 million, that's a lot of money that they're giving in one-time bonuses. Why don't you take a guess? Michael, don't Google this. Michael, no, I don't want anybody to Google this. How much do you think they're going to save annually on their tax bill?
The executives.
I'm saying...
Or the company.
The company. The company. And when they save that on their tax bill, you know what they're going to do with that money, right? They're going to turn around and they're going to put into research and development. No. They're going to put it into stock buybacks, which are essentially putting it into the pockets of the CEO and the board of directors. And of course, remember, now, they get a much bigger tax cut than any of these workers. But let's hold that off for this second. How much money on an annual basis do you think Walt Disney will save from these tax cuts that, remember, on a corporate level, are permanent? How much?
Tens of millions of dollars.
Tens of millions of dollars. Well, give me a more specific.
$30 million.
$30 million. They're given $175 million in one-time bonuses, but they're going to make $30 million annually.
Oh, that was the right.
No. That's not even remotely close.
I was going to say.
Jamie, what do you think?
It's much larger, right?
Oh, it's much larger.
Okay.
Wait, how much are they giving in bonuses?
They're giving $125 million in one-time bonuses. Mm. But they're getting annual tax cut.
I'm going to go with at least $500
million. $500 million. That is more that's than 10 times.
Yeah, that sounds like a much smarter guess.
That is probably a smarter guess. Because, Jamie, you are an incredible skeptic of capitalism. So when Michael says $30 million, you're like, no way. I'm going to go with even more than, like, what, 12 times that, 15 times that. Matt, what do you say?
I'll say $750.
You're going to say $750 because that makes sense because I wouldn't go to you if it was less than $500 million. So, Brendan, what are you going to say? $750 million. We're talking about annual tax savings. In light of the $125 million one-time bonus they're giving to give their workers.
Drew, I'm really happy to be here on The Price is Right, and I'm going to go with
$1. $1. Well, that's smart. You get the downside. Well, you are all wrong. In fact, you are not only just wrong, you are wrong by a factor of four or five times more than the one-time bonus that they're going to give. Walt Disney will likely see an annual tax savings of $1.2 billion a year.
So how, you know,
$1.2 billion a year. But they're giving out a one-time $125 million one-time bonus. That is 14% in year one. Are those bonuses going to be there in year two? That's a pretty good deal. That's a pretty good deal. And yet they're
get your taxes down. No
your taxes.
Yeah. But they're lauded. They are praised. I got news for you. The value of that $125 million, when the board of executives and the CEO are going to make massive, like, their bonuses, their increase in pay, their stock valuation.
Happiest place on earth.
Happiest place on earth.
I can't wait until the workers rise up and put Mickey and Minnie in the guillotine.
There you go. There you go. All right. I promised something.
I think that was one of the reasons that I was so underperforming in my guess was I took like quasi seriously that you actually did have some positive news in that story.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. That was a head fake.
I was like, of course
here's
that was a head fake.
You should know him better than that right now.
But even
completely right.
Is there any person that you can find? Well, I'm sure you could find somebody, I don't know who it would be, who's even more skeptical of capitalism than Jamie, and still off by 600. Like,
dude,
contemplate the cravenness.
Myself. I can't even, I mean, is that including repatriation? Like, what is
there's deferred taxes
there's deferred
and whatnot,
taxes,
but you know, they're having their tax cut, their tax rate cut by 40%. So there's some good news. In addition to the fact that the other day the Supreme Court refused to hear the Pennsylvania case, where the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court found that Pennsylvania's redistricting was unconstitutional under the Pennsylvania state constitution and has ordered a process to rejigger those districts prior to 2018. There's another case that the Supreme Court itself did take, and that's Gill v. Whitford. And that was a case about the partisan gerrymandering that took place in Wisconsin. They did this in 2011. The argument was that it violated the Equal Protection Clause and the plaintiff's First Amendment freedom of association. This was a ruling by a lower federal court. It went to the Supreme Court of the United States, because despite the fact that Democrats won a majority of the statewide assembly vote in 2012 and 2014, Republicans won 60 of the 99 assembly seats. So Democrats got 51% of the vote, and they only got 40% of the seats. They got 51% plus, I should say. So this goes to the Supreme Court. Oral arguments were heard in October. It's quite possible that briefs are now circulating. So members of the court have a sense of how Gill v. Whitford is going. This is conjecture, but very possible. And Ian Millhiser has read some tea leaves and thinks that it is the case that the court is going to find that partisan gerrymandering to be unconstitutional in Wisconsin. This is going to have big, big implications. And the reason why he sees this is that there was a what he calls a fairly routine scheduling order on Tuesday about a case called Rucho versus Common Cause. It centers on congressional maps in North Carolina. As you know, last January, a panel of three federal judges struck down North Carolina's maps as being unconstitutional gerrymander. Republicans requested a stay from the Supreme Court later, which the court granted. Shortly after the stay, the plaintiffs in the case asked the Supreme Court to put that case on its calendar so that we could expedite this for the 2018 election, right? If the court had granted this motion, it would have allowed the justices to decide Rucho quickly enough to maybe redraw the maps in time for November's election. Everybody following me here? But the Supreme Court denied that request to expedite the case, and they're probably going to put it on in the next calendar year. Why does that tell us how Gill v. Whitford may have been decided? It tells us that because two judges dissented to the idea that we would punt this to the next term. And those judges were Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor. And if they know how Gill v. Whitford has been decided or will be decided, have a sense of it because there are drafts going around, they would want this North Carolina case to also be resolved in time for the 2018 election because they would have reason to believe that it would change the maps, making it that much more important to have this done by 2018. It's just speculation, and it's not going to impact North Carolina in 2018, but it may impact Wisconsin in 2018, and it may impact North Carolina 2019 on. So there's your slight flicker of hope for the day, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry,
I feel so much more relaxed about the Disney theft of our entire tax code now.
Sorry, I couldn't do a little bit better than that. But
we're literally like we're torturing 9-year-olds and destroying families and sending them to a place where actually, ironically, MS-13 is actually a serious threat and a national security issue. One of the reasons that some of those Central Asian countries have higher murder rates than Iraq. And then Disney and the rest of the corporate class and oligarchy stealing all of our assets, but they're going to get a good PR day. But there is a little bit of twinking going on with the Wisconsin redistricting.
We actually may get to a point where if one party wins the majority of the votes, they more or less will get that same commensurate amount of representation.
Fucking A.
You gotta be pretty psyched about something
right? That's pretty groundbreaking.
It's a little bit crazy, a little bit leftist.
Maybe that party will also abandon their failed incrementalism.
It's very possible
for immigrants. I don't know.
Let's hope so. A girl can dream.
Or maybe not.
We'll see. Very difficult.
There's only a few things that aren't complicated. Marginal tax breaks for Massapequa and every single thing that Goldman Sachs wants always. Oh, and Israel.
Yes.
That's where you can be bold when you're melting those Palestinians with white phosphorus because Hashem said so. Okay, press conference time.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, fun half. Don't forget, it is your support of this program that makes it possible day in, day out. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Become a member. Just a couple quarters a day, but it makes this show possible. We cannot do it without you. Check out last night's TMBS. What's his name? Felix?
Felix Biederman.
Felix Biederman. Use my coffee cup. And so wasn't very excited about that. There's a flu going around.
He came in and he said, where's Sam's coffee cup?
I'll tell you something. Honestly, you can ask Brendan this morning. It was like, it took me about 30 seconds to come in. I didn't think I had my coat off. And I was like, where's my coffee cup? And I didn't see it near the sink. And I didn't see it on my table. And I didn't see it in the bathroom. And I was like, what? I specifically left my coffee cup right up to.
Wait a second. Did you just tell on yourself there?
No. I didn't bring it into the bathroom.
Do you take your coffee cup in the bathroom?
No.
But why else would it be in the bathroom?
I don't know why it was on your desk either.
Well,
maybe Felix Biederman would have brought it into the bathroom. Okay. I don't know.
All right, yeah.
I know where I left my coffee cup, so there's only so many places in
maybe
the office.
That's some type of nutraceutical protocol where you drink your coffee in the bathroom.
Clearly designed
to be. It's the best way to optimize nutrition.
There you go.
This is a clear alpha male provocation.
So, no, it's not that. It's actually like totally beta because I was just like, I don't want to. There's a flu.
What is alpha about? He gave my coffee cup.
I had to scrub the coffee cup.
Well, and I'm going to cough on my new cutting board.
I had to like
more
put
of
it.
A,
Yeah, exactly.
Every state provocation. Or a complete accident. I don't know.
Well, I don't know what was going down.
It's cuckology.
It was like, also, someone urinated in my office.
Well, that was me. I've been doing that for
years. So I don't know what else happened on that show, but check out TMBS. It's on our YouTube channel or on iTunes, and you could, maybe figure out what he was doing that cup. Also, check out Jamie's Patreon, Jamie Peck, patreon.com/JamiePeck.
That's right.
And justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. See you in the fun half.